Hi everyone, and welcome to the new edition of My Inspiration, a podcast series from HMV in which we give musicians, actors, filmmakers and producers the chance to take a welcome break from talking about themselves and instead talk about their greatest inspiration. I'm your host Tom Goodman, and I'm delighted to welcome you to our latest episode. Our guest today is James Bourne. James is best known to everyone as one third of Busted, the hugely successful pop trio who was shot to fame at the turn of the century. During their career, the band had four number one singles, two Brit Awards, released four studio albums and sold over 5 million records. They ended 2003 with a record 11 consecutive nights at Wembley Arena. Then, just a few weeks later, they split after Bourne's bandmate Charlie Simpson quit the band to form Fightstar. After the split, Bourne kept himself very busy. He became a songwriter for hire and penned songs for McFly, Melanie C, The Saturdays and 5 Seconds of Summer, to name but a few. As well as this, he also wrote two musicals. He was part of McBusted, which brought together, well, back together, Busted and McFly, before Busted reunited for a new album and tour in 2015. Bourne is now promoting Safe Journey Home, his new solo album, his first solo album, which is out now. We spoke to him about its creation, Busted's future and his inspiration. How you doing, man? You all right?
Good, thanks. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. What's it like over in LA?
It's the morning. I bought my house here like 2 years ago, but I've been coming here since I was 19.
You've been making music for, over 15 years now, but this is your first solo project. The others have been bands. What made you think this was the right time to do it by yourself, as it were?
So I was going to do it 7 years ago. I really didn't think that anything was going to come back the way it has. McFly were kind of still together, and they were playing in, I guess they were, they're playing in like venues like Manchester Apollo. So they still had fans coming to see them, you know. It wasn't like arenas, but it was like nice size theatre venues. And I was visiting them, and one thing led to another, and they were like, oh, it'd be really funny if you just played without anyone knowing, like just went out and played. And I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, yeah, I'd love to play for 1500 people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I go out and did this like impromptu acoustic thing, and the first song I played was a solo song that I'd written for my solo stuff. This was like in 2013, and the reaction was so big that all these offers started coming, like reunion offers, and like, oh, you should do your reunion but do it with McFly and blah blah blah. And then all of a sudden, fast forward, 8 months, we're playing to 15,000 people. it's like, and then that happened. And it just kept coming. Like, we just kept, every year, we just kept doing arena tours. And had this amazing, like, touring resurgence, which led to a record deal and then the reunion of Busted. And so it was this, like, all this stuff kept happening, and in the back of my mind, I was like, well, this is incredible, but I wonder if I'll ever get around to like what my original plan was, you know? So I was like, great. I'll do all this stuff. I'll take as much as it has to offer. And then when that's quietened down, I'll then get around to doing what I wanted to do with my solo. So I've actually been quite patient, but it was like easy to be patient because there was so much good stuff happening. You know, a lot of dreams were coming true that I didn't think would. So, you know, I guess first time round being in Busted and starring McFly with Tom, that was like dream A. And then the unexpected reunion was dream B. And now my solo stuff is dream C, you know, but the solo stuff was actually dream B. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just had to wait a while.
Yeah. So hopefully that explains that, you know, sure. It did irk me, you know, like, because nowadays everyone's solo. I mean, I don't know if you know that, but it's like the way that it's set up now, everybody's geared up online in a very solo way. Everybody has their own Instagram page. Everybody has their own Twitter page. Everybody has their own identity online, right? And Spotify is like, you know, people post to their social media stuff every day. And as a songwriter, for me, if there's a site I should be posting to regularly, it's Spotify, because it's like Instagram for musicians. You know, it's a social media app for musicians. So it really used to irk me that that was empty. Like my solo Spotify page had nothing on it. So it just kind of was like, I've got to get around to doing it. And now finally, here we are.
Yeah. Had you planned, I mean, having had to push back and push back and push back, had you planned to do it this year anyway, or has COVID basically just given you the time to do it?
No, I mean, I actually finished my first album last year, and the plan was to put it out this year. And then I postponed it for a bit because I wanted to play shows as well. And I thought, well, I don't want to release it and not be able to play shows. And then as time went by, I changed my mind because I was like, well, one thing I'm allowed to do this year is release music. So maybe I should do that.
Yeah.
And I can always play shows later, you know. So I've certainly done more writing in lockdown. I've been more productive and more creative. So yeah, everything's kind of worked out still the way I imagined, just a little bit later.
And these are the songs that were done with John Fields, who you've worked with quite a lot over the years. I mean, it's interesting that in pop, I mean, people cover short-term relationships and working with lots of different writers, but you found a real groove, you know, with one producer, which is rare for that sort of thing.
It's real, is what it is. It's like the thing about the pop world, and this is the thing, because like Busted is pop and my roots are all completely pop, right? But like, as far as pop goes, I would say it was as real as it gets, because like, I've never understood working with everybody. I just don't get it. I didn't like the way the McBusted album was made. I never understood it. I was like, I wrote all the number ones. Why can't I write the McBusted album? You know what I mean? I wrote all the songs, you know, every single hit we ever had. But for some reason, they wanted us to make an album in this One Direction kind of way and wanted me to go and write with all these people. And I just honestly, like, didn't understand it. It was like 10 years had gone by and people had forgotten I knew how to write songs. And I was like, hey, if there's one thing I can bring to the table here, it's songwriting. I didn't really understand that. And this pop way, record company, like A&R people at record companies, a lot of them don't know how to make albums either, you know? My album was made in a week.
Yeah, that's unheard of.
Well, my second album was made in a week over the phone. So the difference is I want to release songs at this point in my life purely for enjoyment purposes, like purely for enjoyment, self-fulfillment, whatever you want to call it. Record companies and pop artists, they're worried more about the success than they are the song. The song takes a back seat and they don't care where it comes from. And they've got the world and its mother submitting songs. And it's just messy. Some songs have 10 songwriters on them. Like, it doesn't take, like, who wrote the words and who wrote the melody if there's 10 people on a song? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who did what? I mean, some people are doing nothing, literally. Some people are just in the room, but they're people who have a name that, like, is relevant that week. Or they just had a hit that the record company, like, so they're in the room. So it's like they don't really care about the music. They just care about the success. So that's why you get a lot of Instagram people with a lot of followers getting record deals, you know.
Taking a shortcut.
Yeah, it's a shortcut and it's not long, you know. Like in the beginning, like when Busted kind of exploded out the box, it was a little bit like we got a lot of people like saying shit about us. We had a lot of success like very quickly. And it was kind of to be expected. Like right now, like if I'm 36, I probably wouldn't have liked us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like as an onlooker, as an onlooker, as an outsider that wasn't in touch with what was actually happening or didn't know what was happening and assumed what was happening, like I wouldn't have liked us, you know. But if I had known, I would have done, you know. And I guess, you know, I was like, well, you know, in 20 years, when I'm still making music, which is where we are pretty much, maybe people will start to see me a bit differently. You know, maybe people will just, maybe people will say, oh, he did write those songs. And he's never really stopped kind of loving music or writing songs and just getting a lot of, you know, that is why I do it. That's why I've always done it. So like my ambition and my enthusiasm for my music is bigger than it was when I began. But like, it's not like there's an entire building prioritizing my release. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like I have a deal on my albums coming out. But when Busted came out, we had an entire record company in our corner, like an entire building, before it was like, you know, before the record company really kind of squashed down and like came in the same building as all the other like record companies. It's like when the music business was still alive and kicking, we had an entire record company designated to breaking our band. So I just think, I'm hoping that maybe people will see the authenticity of like what I'm doing with my music, basically.
So we've got you here to talk about your inspiration. So do you want to tell us who it was, who you chose, and how easy it was to choose with them?
Blink. Mm. Yeah, I mean, they are definitely, they're very big source of inspiration for why I left school to start a band. It was like the one band that we were listening to that kind of influenced the Busted first, the early Busted music, and steered us away from all the other bands that everyone was like at the time. Like, you had this 90s boy band shockwave, like Backstreet, NSYNC, and I liked all those. I wasn't a hater of those bands. Like, I actually liked a lot of those songs. But for some reason, we leaned kind of in this guitar pop way and wrote songs lyrically that were more in line with what they were doing, less swearing. Our records never really were in the same league as Blink records, but like, we were inspired by them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We like loved their videos, loved their personalities, and their songs, and it just kind of bled into what we were doing.
What was the first Blink thing you heard? Was it a video? Was it a song? Where did you first kind of encounter them?
The first time I saw Blink was, they were, there was like a behind the scenes thing on MTV. And it was just these guys with tattoos running down a street. I remember thinking, who's this? and that's that. So What's My Age Again was like the song that introduced me to Blink. And I just remember thinking the lyric was so different from Backstreet Boy songs or NSYNC songs. You know, you would never have found a Backstreet Boy song called What's My Age Again. Do you know what I mean? I thought that it was funny. I thought that the music sounded cool, and it was guitars, and you know, I knew how to play guitar, like, and they were easy songs to learn and play. So I liked the upbeat feel to Blink. I loved the Travis Barker drumming, and just kind of struck a nerve, you know, struck a chord. And we started to write kind of more up-tempo stuff, you know.
How kind of easy was it to, you know, write songs in that style? Because as you say, you know, it's, Travis Barker's a phenomenal player, but the other two, it's relatively simple, I think.
It is. It's a few chords and like some great riffs. The riffs and the drumming is really what sets Blink apart. And a lot of that is down to Jerry Finn, you know, because he really understood how to arrange and produce a song. And you can hear the difference. You know, you can hear that leap they made when they finally landed on Enemy of the State. It's their earlier albums like Dude Ranch and Cheshire Cat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can hear it. You can hear the jump when you listen to Enemy of the State and Take Off Pants and Jacket and self-titled. When you listen to those albums, they are like, and then, okay, and then, like, when you listen to Neighborhood, you can hear a slight step backwards.
It's a gloss, isn't there, that isn't on the earlier records?
Yeah, like, it's just, there's just a je ne sais quoi about those three albums. And that is the Jerry Finn Midas touch. And it's crazy because, I don't know if you know, but like, I live in his house now, his old house.
No, I didn't really. No, why?
Yeah, so this room was where the room I'm sitting right now, this is the room where he used to listen back to all of his mixes. He had like a wall of speakers, and he left that, well, his girlfriend, because he died obviously after the Blink album and, you know, the self-titled one. But his girlfriend remained in the house for a long time, but she left a lot of Jerry's stuff here.
Yeah.
And then, so there's all other kinds of stuff. Like he left this, like, well, she left this painting that was hand painted by D.D. Ramone. It's an original D.D. Ramone art, like on canvas. There's another one in the bathroom. They just left a lot of cool stuff.
Did you, obviously, when you're starting to write songs at that point in time with the Blink setup, I mean, what were the early kind of compositions like?
I think they're quite different, because I was in a band when I was 13 at school. And that was kind of more like, I mean, I used to like Green Day. I used to do my homework and listen to Green Day, which is another one of Jerry's projects. But like, I just think I got better. My songwriting got a bit better for Busted. It wasn't very good when I was younger. I didn't really know how to do it then. I mean, I would say I was a natural songwriter, but I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing. Like, as I learned, I realized, the more I learned, the more I realized I had a natural ability to write songs. But I still like put a lot of effort in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
It wasn't like I just could write it like off the bat. Like I listened to a lot of advice and took a lot of criticism. And, you know, when people would tell me honest stuff about my music, I would like take it seriously.
The early Busted stuff and Blink and Green Day and things like that, what they all have in common is there's a cheekiness. It's funny. Which I guess, is that a direct thing you were able to take from them and gave you license to do it?
Yeah, I think it's like they gave, you know, I think they made a lot of people understand that there was more to like being in a band than just like posing and like, you know, singing and, you know, being in a boy band. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it can be cool too. You can play a guitar and you can sing songs about whatever you want, literally. Like you can just sing about whatever you want. And I think I don't think Year 3000 would have gotten written without their influence, because I remember thinking about what songs, you know, to write for Busted. I remember sitting down at piano and that song by Robbie Williams was on Millennium.
Oh, right, yeah.
It was a big, big hit at the time. And I remember, just write a song about the next one, you know?
Yeah.
And that's definitely, to think that way, I think thinking that way definitely came from my love for Blink, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, obviously, in the early days of Busted, I mean, you talked about the Backstreet Boys and things in NSYNC, and you were presented as sort of like, I don't know if this is unfair, a sort of hybrid in the sense that it had the pop sheen and it was sort of safer, but it was the music of Blink 182 and New Found Glory and Green Day. I mean, did you ever kind of wish that you just become a band and just started touring and then you might have been looked at differently? You might have started in Kerrang rather than in Smash Hits.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think we were broken by people that knew to break us a certain way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, marketing is such a big part of it. A lot of musicians hate to admit that, but it is. And I think, you know, a lot of the bands that we would have loved to have toured with that were a big, big thing at the time. You see, those bands were breaking a certain way because that's how they knew how to break those bands. They knew, oh, we'll release a record, we'll put them on the road. So New Found Glory, Phoenix TX, Something Corporate, they were all just playing cool shows. You know, their music was, the artwork and the packaging for their music, it was all similar, you know. It was coming from the same, it was coming from a certain place.
Yeah.
And the people running that show knew how to break those bands the way they broke them. So you could see there was a clear difference in the way that those bands were breaking and the way we break. But in the UK, we broke a lot bigger, you know.
Yeah, there is that.
In the UK, like we did, you know, we were, if they were playing Shepherd's Bush Empire, we were playing Wembley, you know, and 12 times in 1 year, by the way.
Yeah.
So So it was like, you know, because of the era that we came out, we would get mentioned in the same sentence as bands like S Club, and there was just no parallel whatsoever between our bands. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
if you hear a Phoenix TX record or a Starting Line record and your record, there is no difference in production.
Well, it's guitar. I mean, I think their production actually was a bit better. I prefer it a bit. But I'm just saying that, like, Busted was more in line with a band than a boy band. But that doesn't come from a place of hating boy bands, because I love boy bands. I like Backstreet Boys because I love Max Martin. So I love those songs because I also appreciate that those songs were written by great songwriters, but they were also terrible boy bands, you know?
Yeah.
So I think some people like to just, oh, I don't like that, I like this. And it's like, no, I just like what's good. If the boy band song's good, I like it. If the Blink song is good, I like it. If the Blink song isn't good, I won't like it. So it's like a song, I go on a song by song basis. I don't let the artists that I listen to define who I am.
But it was more tribal back then, I think, without a doubt.
It was very tribal. That's the best way to describe it.
You think people assumed you didn't write your own songs because you were grouped together with people who didn't write their own songs?
Absolutely, that happened. And also because people thought we were too young. People didn't believe, because of how young we were, that we were writing the song, or that I was writing, coming up with a lot of these songs, all of them, really. I mean, there was maybe a couple of songs on an album that I didn't have a hand in, but all the singles, you know, I did. I was writing them, you know.
So, I mean, how, having heard Blink-182, when did you first see him live? Did you see him on any of the early tours in the UK?
I saw them a few times. The first time I met Blink wasn't at a Blink show. it was at the Astoria, and I was sitting in that section upstairs at the side, you know, the old Astoria.
Now Tottenham Court Road Station.
Exactly, yeah. Tottenham Court Road Station. That's where I met Blink for the first time. And Travis wasn't there. It was just Mark and Tom. Just really friendly, very cool. Like, they were very, kind of a very, like, peak of their career, really, because they were just enormous. Like, as big as you could be. Like, most bands in their genre didn't have the superstardom that they had, you know? So it was exciting. Like, and then they played, and I went to see them. I think it was at Wembley.
Did you learn much about stagecraft from watching those shows?
Yeah, I remember they had, like, some cool things happen at their show that I thought were cool, like, stage ideas, you know? Their shows are always very exciting. Like, I think their personality came across in their music and their stage show. Yeah. It was just in all of their ideas. Like, it was just, like, in everything. So I think that's why Blink did so well, because fans could really see their personalities in everything they did. It was very honest, you know?
And how have you kind of found it watching what's happened in the years since? Because obviously the draw to the band was Mark and Tom were best friends, and then it all went to shit, which is a strange thing to watch play out, because it's played out very publicly.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, because they have so many fans that will follow everything that they do or everything they say. I think as well, it's interesting how Tom, you know, is not in the band, but the band is continuing, right? But that's fascinating to a lot of people. But then not a lot of people understand that it's still Tom's band. Tom DeLonge is still a partner of Blink. He's just not in it on the road.
Yeah, it's a very weird situation.
Yeah, well, he's a founder of Blink-182 that just isn't in the office anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they've come to some kind of weird legal settlement where presumably still get to play the songs. But, you know, who could have predicted that it would fall out this way, and that Mark and Travis wouldn't just say, well, let's take a few years off. They'd actually go, right, we'll keep him going. Because they didn't the first time this all spilled out.
No. I think Tom as well just kind of has his other things, like his Aliens and his other bands, his other projects. He's always doing like a shit ton of stuff. You know, and Travis doesn't stop songwriting either. I mean, he's always writing with people. They're all very... proactive people, and they've got the resources to do all their ideas and all the ideas they have in their head. They can actually bring them to fruition because they have the resources because of the success of Blink, I guess.
This time around, they've said, even if you don't want to play, we're going to keep playing. When you had Charlie go the first time, you said, well, no, we're not going to keep playing. This is it. I mean, it's a strange parallel, that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess like a part of me always felt that if we just packed it in, you see, like, I think as well with Busted, there were a lot of decisions that we made that didn't really follow the formula of the bands we were being compared to. Like, take that in One Direction and the Spice Girls, you know, they all did this member down for like a year or two before they properly disbanded. And I think the way that we ended helped us come back, because it's like you put it on ice. It's like if the band dies, put it on ice really quickly and preserve it maybe for the future. I think maybe that was my outlook on it.
Even all the way back then, because you really quit at the height of your powers. You know, it wasn't like a downwards bill. They weren't.
Yeah, but like that's the way I felt about it. I was the one that insisted on the press conference because I didn't think it was fair. Because I felt it was a little bit unfair on me. Like, I didn't want the band to end. And I thought, well, we owe the fucking fans an explanation. It's not going to just fizzle. And, you know, I mean, Charlie, you know, it probably wasn't easy for him to kind of do that conference. But, I mean, you got to stand up for your decisions. And, you know, everyone, we all respected his decision. Like, before we came back, I said to Charlie, we sat in his garden and I just said to him, you know, I hope you understand, you don't have to explain anything to me. And he said, well, that's great. You know, like, that's amazing. And I really think that that was a big weight off his shoulders, because like he came around, like after we'd hung out a couple times, like he came around to the idea of doing the band very, like, you know, easily. It was like someone had said something to him, or like a weight had been lifted. But like it wasn't hard for us to get our shit together when the time came. That we're friends now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also at the time Busted was at the point, we all got other record deals. We all were preoccupied with our other things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an interesting story, the whole thing. But like, I think a lot of the things that Busted have done over the years aren't the typical, they haven't been the typical commercially right decision. but splitting up when we did the way we did, I think was, yeah. Like, you know, when we came back and did Night Driver and we completely changed our logo and our sound and everything, a lot of people would have said, like, what the hell are you doing, right? And, you know, like looking back at it, I think, oh, what, you know, why didn't I fight for that? But the truth is that I just wanted to make an album that I liked, and so did we all. So we really weren't thinking commercially, because it was just about, I think our comeback was very genuine and very, I'm not interested in doing it if it isn't. Like, and I feel like that's the way it was for me always. Like, even in the beginning when we were at our peak, you know, I always feel like people go, but do you have more control now? And it's like, well, I've never not written the songs. In fact, compared to McBusted, we had more control in Busted the first time around. Yeah. You know, when it came to the music, I think it's easy for the hit, because of the history of Busted, it's easy to kind of say it was just this commercial thing. But, you know, in hindsight, looking back at all the decisions we've made and all the things that we've done the opposite of what they should have done,
yeah,
it's anything but, you know, we hit a point where the timing was perfect for us to break, but it definitely wasn't a cynically planned thing. We had a big record company behind us, as a lot of successful acts do, but it wasn't like, at the core of Busted, the three of us are just three dudes that want to like what we do.
Yeah.
And then when Charlie stopped liking it, he left. And then when he liked the idea of coming back, he changed his mind and he came back. And it's like, it's just unfolded in a very natural way. It's not a big like planned thing.
It's interesting because obviously, to speak to the Blink parallel, Tom DeLonge came back. They obviously reunited after Travis Barker's near-death experience. And then what Mark Hoppus and Travis Barker said subsequently was they figured out by the end that he was basically embarrassed in the band and it was just about money. Whereas for you, you've realised the opposite is true, that you're not making the commercially sensible decisions. You know, you're doing stuff you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what the next step is, but where I stand with it is I'm not opposed ever to Busted. Like it's given us a lot and a lot of enjoyment and a lot of it's opened up a lot of doors because of the success of it. But I wouldn't do it just for money. Do you know what I mean? If the creative situation is enticing, I think we're all there. But I'm just not. It's just not on my mind right now because I'm so excited about the records I'm making now.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, you've been able to navigate different projects and work things through different ways. And I mean, I guess with Blink and with lots of other bands of their era, they have discovered that it's a genre that's hard to grow up in.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why we felt like we needed to try other sounds as a band. And I think if we made another album, I honestly believe it would be different to all of our other albums. I have like three different ideas for like what a Busted album could be like. And they all sound good to me.
Yeah.
And I think as long as the three of us are singing on it and we're writing it and it's got that, the songs are kind of still have that kind of Busted structure, I think fans would listen to it. But it's just about, you know, leaving behind stuff that you can enjoy when you're older and not, you know, be pissed off about.
What have you made of Latter Day Blink 182? I mean, kind of Neighbourhoods onwards. What do you think of the later records?
I think that the Enema of the State to the self-titled album, that era, I think it's like an untouchable era, because you got to take into account like the age that they were when they made those albums, the producer they had. It was like a happy family, perfect storm. But then I like the Neighbourhoods album. I actually like the album. I just think that it doesn't quite live up to their self-titled album or the two albums before it, you know. Yeah. But I like Neighbourhoods. But I'd say Neighbourhoods is maybe my fourth or fifth favourite album of theirs.
What's the one then? I mean, if you had to pick one, what's the one? Is it Enema of the State?
It's that or it's self-titled. Oh, man, I don't know, because I like those three albums. It's hard to choose those three. I like them all. Self-titled was my favorite for a while. I love that Cure collaboration. I'm feeling this when that came out, that first single, that was a big impactful moment too. And then Miss You is quite, you know, that's interesting because that was like probably the biggest hit on the album. And that's a good song too.
What do you think is the kind of the undiscovered gem from their catalogue? I mean, what's the thing that gets unfairly skipped over?
The song that gets skipped over the most from Blink.
Yeah, the ones that people kind of, it's like an undiscovered gem.
Not Now, probably.
Okay.
That's probably my favourite Blink song.
That's the tail end of the self-titled record, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Is it?
I think so. What is it you like about that one?
I like the way, I just like the song, like the song itself. It's on their greatest hits here.
Okay. Maybe it's not on a record.
Yeah, because I can't pinpoint it on a record. It's just a great riff, man. This is an amazing song. The way it comes in at the beginning, the riff is amazing. And yeah, dude, I think it's a greatest hits thing.
Well, that's a rare thing, because normally the stuff that goes with greatest hits are stuff that's been sat in a drawer for a while, but...
It's an amazing song. It's not on Enema of the State. It's not on Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. It's a greatest hits. What a song.
What a song. Well, thanks very much for your time and thanks very much for letting us hear your inspiration. It's been really good to talk to you and best of luck with all things solo and next year's record, which we look forward to too. So, James Bourne, thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of My Inspiration. If you'd like to check out our previous episode, which include chats with LaRue, Pet Shop Boys, Luke Evans, May Martin, Big Nasty and many more, you can listen to them all on our website. You can find all the episodes at hmv.com/podcast as well as on all your other podcast providers. Next week, our guest will be Barney Greenway, frontman of cult metalers Napalm Death. He'll be telling us all about their new album, as well as his inspiration, punk bands Crass and Conflict.